Now, we have been spending a lot of time in the book of Jeremiah, and we have learned that while it is talking in the historical situation about the enormous tragedy that overcame Judah in the year 587 BC when they were destroyed by the Babylonians. Actually, however, it is a dramatic picture or example of God's teaching that at the end of the world, or just prior to the end of the world, there is that period of great tribulation, which Judah was a picture of the local congregations that have come under the wrath of God. Well, now we go on into chapter 32. We find Zedekiah making a speech to Jerusalem. In verse 3, it says, "For Zedekiah, king of Judah, has shut him up, saying," now this is the words of Zedekiah, who represents all of Judah, "Wherefore dost thou prophesy?" He's talking to Jeremiah. In other words, even though he doesn't like Jeremiah, he's got him in prison, he wishes he'd go away, nevertheless, he has been listening because he is going to describe what Jeremiah has been telling him. That is what God has been telling him through Jeremiah. "Wherefore dost thou prophesy and say, Thus saith Jehovah, Behold, I will give this city into the hand of the king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And Zedekiah, king of Judah, shall not escape out of the hand of the Chaldeans, but shall surely be delivered into the hand of the king of Babylon, and shall speak with him mouth to mouth, and his eyes shall behold his eyes, and he shall lead Zedekiah to Babylon, and there shall he be until I visit him, saith Jehovah, though he fight with the Chaldeans, ye shall not prosper." Had Zedekiah clearly understood what God was telling Jeremiah concerning the future of King Zedekiah, he had understood exactly, and it happened because it all turned out exactly the way that he is indicating this. Now, why does God tell us that? You know, if we go back Luke chapter 12, there's a very mysterious verse. So we, through the years, have always tried to explain it in some way or another, but it's still mysterious. Because, you know, it says here in verse 47, "And that servant which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes, but he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes." How does that work? And what makes it more mysterious, and this is something we've never really faced carefully enough, if you go back to James 2, James chapter 2, verse 10, "For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all." How can you then get a situation where the man who knew the master's will, here is someone who commits one tiny little sin, and God is emphasizing, you are guilty of the whole law of God. And in other words, whether you've committed a little sin or a big sin or one sin or 100 sins, you're guilty of the whole law of God. How in the world then can he say that the servant who knew the master's will and disobeyed is going to be beaten with many stripes? Furthermore, there is a problem that we have learned, that finally the essence of God's judgment is that the wages of sin is death. That already was pronounced against mankind in the Garden of Eden. In the day you eat of the tree, you will surely die. It meant that you are subject to physical death, and you will experience the second death, which is to be destroyed forever. And that is what finally is the final outcome of what we call hell. How can that be? What about the people that died the previous year, or that died 1,000 years ago, or 10,000 years ago? Are they going to be there? No, they're not. There's no evidence that they are. They're dead. And there's no evidence that they're ever going to be brought again to physical life. It does speak about the resurrection of the dead, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be resurrected to a physical life. It can mean something else. That's another subject altogether. But there's no evidence that they ever come to physical life again. There's no statement in the Bible that would clearly indicate that. Well, who is there? All the people. Now remember that Zedekiah is talking to Jeremiah 1 year before Jerusalem was destroyed. It was just ahead. They're living at that time. There is more information pouring out into the world today than has ever been. Never before in the history of the world has it been as clearly understood as we're able to understand it today what the nature of salvation is. That under no circumstance are we ever to think for a moment that any work that we have done is accomplished or assisted in our salvation. For the first time in the history of the world, we know precisely what the timeline of history is, all the way back from creation all the way to the present day. For the first time in history, we're really coming to a very, very detailed and definite understanding of what God's judgment is. For example, that there is never going to be an official judgment throne set up. There's all kinds of truth that is pouring out. Who is hearing about these things? That is, who is becoming knowledgeable about these things? Well, not the people out there who never open the Bible. They're not becoming knowledgeable of it. They don't care about it. That's just those Christians ranting and raving, and they've always been ranting and raving, and we don't care about them at all. And there are plenty of people in the world like that. But on the other hand, there are, according to the World Almanac, and that's not a Bible, but at least it gives us some indicators, there's more than 2 billion people, about a third of the world's population, that call themselves Christian. And what is so deplorable and so unhappy is that while we are teaching these new things that are flowing out of the Bible, and there are a great amount of them, they're not being believed, they're not being trusted by most of the people in the world. If we looked at the typical church today, there may be some exceptions, but there are very few. The typical church today, it probably has about the same number of members or interested people in their church as they had when the end of the church age occurred. Some of the churches may become very tiny because the members have moved over to one of the mega churches. So the little Baptist church on the corner went down from 100 people to 20 people. But the big cathedral on the other side of the city now has 20,000 members. So it's still about the same number of people. Even in amongst the Roman Catholics, for example, sure, they're not all taking Mass anymore like they used to. They are not as devout, but still, they're Roman Catholic. They haven't thrown in their membership card at all. They're still Roman Catholic. Now, as I indicated, there are exceptions. But there's a great portion of the world's population, and 2 billion people is not a tiny little bit. That's a big piece. That heretofore have not known very much. You know, throughout the church age, there were all kinds of things in the Bible that God did not reveal. We've talked about that at various times. But this is the way I see this kind of information fit together. Namely, that here are the preachers out there all over the world. Are they aware, for example, of the Ministry of Family Radio? Are we just a little tiny flicker of flame that's over there in Oakland, California, and we have a little group of people that know about what we're teaching? And the answer is no, that isn't the way God set us up. And we've been around a long time, and nobody can fault us that we're coming with signs and wonders or dreams or visions or anything of that nature. Everything has to come out of the Bible. And yet the things we're talking about are grievously serious to the ears of every church. There has never been a time when there has been such a castigation, such a betrayal of all the churches as today, as we are saying again and again, not because we have a vendetta against the churches or a crusade against the churches, but simply because we're repeating what the Bible tells us to say, namely that every church is ruled over by Satan. Can you imagine a church not hearing about that somewhere along the way? That there is this group that are worldwide in their what they're declaring, and if we listen to them, we know they do have a real knowledge of the Bible, and they're saying that we are under the power of Satan. And they're saying that the Holy Spirit is not present with us. And they're saying that we are going to be all under judgment, and we're going to come under the wrath of God if we remain here. And they're saying that our salvation plan is totally haywire. It's man-made altogether. Everything that is repugnant to us, it's as repugnant as it can be. Can you imagine any church not knowing about that terrible, terrible betrayer of everything that they have been? It's never been like this in the world, that this has ever been possible. Now, what is the outcome of all this? It means that even though they don't buy it for a moment, they don't really think there's any truth there, but they know. They hear it. Did Zedekiah, did he believe Jeremiah that they were going to be destroyed by the king Nebuchadnezzar? Of course not. He was the ruler of the holy city, Jerusalem. Thank you. That's the city of God. That's where the temple was. It'll never happen. But he knew what God was saying. He knew. God lays it out here. He knew that he would see eye to eye with the king of Babylon. He would be led into Babylon. In other words, that would imply that something happened that he may not have understood why he would be led, but it certainly indicated that he was on the right track, and understanding that he would be blinded, that his eyes would be plucked out. And so he didn't know that kind of detail, but the outcome was the same. And it's the same way with the churches today. They know. They hear. They don't believe. They don't buy it. They won't acknowledge it. They won't. But believe you me, they know what Family Radio is saying. They know. They know the Master's will. They have been given information that's way, way greater than had been given any church previously. Way, way more. And yet they are not doing the Master's will. So God, in his mysterious providence, has provided a very interesting situation that this servant who knew the Master's will must be punished more greatly than the one who did not know the Master's will. So God has provided a gateway into hell. Hell is destruction. That's Remember that in Revelation 9, it says that there is a king that rules over the bottomless pit, and that was destruction or the destroyer, and that is the and God personified that in Job 28, where he says, "Death and hell say, I don't know where there is wisdom." It's personified in the fact that the gates of hell shall not prevail. And so that 5 months is like the gates of hell. It's introducing or bringing everything to that final end when everything is burned up. But in the meanwhile, who is living in the world during those 5 months? All the people who were just living during that time when all of this final information, and there's an enormous amount of it of great importance and of great significance, and which is very, very definitely tied into every church. It's a reflection on every local congregation, every missionary, every... there's no way that they're going to miss this. There's no possibility. It's just too outlandish. It's just too spectacular. It's just too important. And not only that, it is God who is going to put it on their hearts, so they're going to listen. They're going to know, and yet they're going to say, no way, no way. And so they will be beaten with many stripes. They knew the way, and yet they didn't cry out to God for mercy. They didn't cry out, oh, Lord, have mercy. Could it be that none of this would happen? I forgive my sins. Is it possible that I, too, might become saved? And I think that that is why where we find the law of God tying itself together, both in the 5 months together with the statement of Luke chapter 12. Now there's another reason also for this 5 months, but that's not indicated in this particular passage. Okay, that's our lesson. That's all the time we have right now. In our next study, we're going to go on into this very, very interesting fact that Jeremiah was told to buy a piece of land for 17 shekels of silver. What's all that about? We'll look at that in our next study.